I'm here with Steve Ellis, and he will be sharing a few of about 600 different odd and amazing stories about our area in a program called Amazing Tales of Southwest Michigan. He's the publisher of Spark Magazine, which is geared towards the baby boomer generation of various things in Southwest Michigan. And before that, he worked for the Kalamazoo Gazette for 24 years. Did I leave anything out?
No, I think that's pretty good.
All right, so how did you get into collecting all of these stories?
Good question. I think, and the way I remember it, my grandfather, his name was Sam Harmon over in the Pontiac area, used to hand me all of these oddball little Stranger Than Science by Frank Edwards and Fate magazine, and they were always these somewhat believe-it-or-not type stories, but a little wilder and crazier. But one of them happened to have happened in Pontiac, Michigan in 1962, a man who ended up dying of spontaneous combustion, burning up in his car in Pontiac, Michigan in a garage. So I thought, hey, this is near home. So I had my mother drive me down to the Pontiac Press at the time, and we went down the basement through the bound volumes trying to find this particular story to see if it really did happen. We found it. It wasn't quite as exciting as the book. It just said man dies of somewhat mysterious cause and fire in his garage. Did not mention spontaneous combustion, but hey, we did find it anyway. And that started a whole life of digging out weird oddball stories.
And when you work at the Kalamazoo Gazette, that was actually where you found a lot of these stories, wasn't it?
That is correct. We would have various advertisers and folks around the community call up and say, my grandfather owned a particular business and such happened back in the 30s. Can you find out about it? And the only real way was to go down in the dungeons of the basement of the Kalamazoo Gazette, looking through these big black bound volume books. There was one for every month. And I'd be fascinated. I'd find what they were looking for, but I'd end up reading all the crazy stories. And so over a period of probably 10 years, I would take these bound volumes home at night, bring them back, and went through copying and photographing all of the oddball little quick-read stories, we'd call them, that happened around the greater Kalamazoo area over throughout the 1930s.
So throughout the 1930s, how far back does this? How far back did you go when you were looking?
What I did, it took a long time. It took me probably 7 or 8 years just to get through the 1930s. And I glanced at the 50s, and they only went back that far. We donated all the older ones to the libraries around here in the historical societies. So I just started with our oldest books and never really got any further. But in spot checking the 50s and 60s, they just didn't, maybe it was too close to home or they didn't seem quite as interesting. The 30s seemed to have a wide variety of just crazy things happening that aren't still around today.
So I guess the 30s were weird.
I guess so.
So what kinds of stories did you find?
All right, I brought a handful here, and what I did was photograph and copy them over the years. But here I'll just read a couple headlines here and tell you a little bit about it. Crawls from auto train wreck, walks to work. A man by the name of William Kirsten on West Michigan Avenue downtown was walking to work, and he was hit by a train, and he flew over 120 feet through the air. Everyone rushed over. It was during the day to see if he was okay. He said, hey, I'm fine. Where's my hat? It's my second day on the job. I don't want to be late. Never went to the doctor. Nothing was wrong with him, but flew through the air 120 feet after being hit by a train.
How does that happen?
Do not know. Here's a couple of odd ones. We have celebrities from time to time that come to town. The star rhinoceros from one of the old Tarzan movies, the State Theater brought it out, and they chained it up out in front, I guess, for a couple of days, and you could go and Mary was the rhinoceros's name, and I guess was the star of one of the early Tarzan movies. A couple other ones I found in an article. Pretty Boy Floyd, one of the early gangsters from the 30s, was spotted supposedly coming through Kalamazoo. And the person that called it into the police was sure because he saw a suspicious, well-dressed looking man changing license plates, and it looked like there were bullet holes in the back end of the car. So he was positive it was Pretty Boy Floyd. We've had over the years, Ty Cobb was on vaudeville at one of the early theaters. He tried his head only work, but I guess one winter he traveled around the country on stage. Joe Louis fought in the old armory. which is downtown still in the Rose Street Market. Amelia Earhart on a barnstorming tour once came through Kalamazoo back in the 1930s.
Barnstorming? Can you explain that a little
bit? Oh, raising money. She was flying around the world, but that costs a lot of money, and she needed backers and sponsors. So she would fly and take little smaller trips, flying from town to town to raise money and publicity for this big event. And Kalamazoo was one of the stops that she made before her, I guess, tragic flight where she disappeared. Couple other ones. These are just a lot of these things that probably wouldn't make the paper anymore, but a boy by the name of Castor Vanderveen on Bessie Street found a 12-pound puffball in his backyard.
Puffball mushroom.
Puffball mushroom, about the size of a bowling ball. Bandit kidnaps and robs worker at gas station, but what they thought the odd thing was, he had a large black collie in the back seat, the robber did, so they were able to find him later, because whenever he robbed places, he always brought his dog with him.
You know, I think that I heard an urban legend one time that said that there was a group of robbers who brought a duck with them.
One of the promotions around here, let me think of it a little bit, one gas station for a whole week had all their employees dress up like Sherlock Holmes and wait on cars coming in. So not sure why, what the connection was, but I guess it was quite successful. One of the more fun ones I remember, there was a house on Walnut Street, which is down in the Vine neighborhood. The folks living there were going to Florida or somewhere and very concerned that someone would break in their house. Apparently there were some robberies at that time. So they thought, let's leave the radio on full blast. It'll sound like we're home. I know my dad used to leave all the lights on when we were kids. Ah, they'll think we're home. But back in the 30s, it was a lot of these cops and robbers, Dick Tracy, G-Man type of stations. So a lot of gunshots and explosions and screaming and yelling. The neighbors thought someone was being murdered, so they called the police, and the police came and actually had to kick in the front door, thinking there was somebody being murdered in the house, and it was just the radio blaring away in this living room. So folks came back, their front doors broken, and had to have the police explain what happened at their house. There's another one out at Pretty Lake Adventure Camp, which is still around. The caretaker out there would go back every day, maybe during the winter when it wasn't used as much, and all the lights would be on in the building out there at one of the main buildings, and he could not figure it out. Three or four nights in a row, the lights would be on. He'd shut them off, go home. No sign of robbery, no sign of break-in, nothing missing. And finally, he stayed in there one night, and he was very curious what happened. A woodpecker had pecked a hole in the wall and wanted to come in to get warm, and when he would come through the hole, somehow he would get tangled up in the pull cord, and before he could get into the building, it would accidentally turn on the lights by jerking on the cord every night. So the caretaker filled up the hole and got rid of the ghost of Pretty Lake Adventure Camp. That was one of the better ones. Man rolled off a sleeping train. He made it all the way to Jackson, sleeping on the top of a boxcar. But apparently he hit a bump or something, and he rolled off, and he had to be 10, 12 feet off the ground, but didn't hurt him. But that ended his journey on the top of the train across the state. Another train one. Two boys wanted to go to the 1934 World Series, the Tigers against the Cardinals over in Detroit. Had no money, no tickets, no way of getting there. They decided, let's hop on the top of a train, and we will ride to Detroit. I guess it got quite cold, and they were shivering and everything else, but they made it as far as Augusta before the police said at least a half dozen people had called in saying there were two boys sitting on the top of a train car heading to Detroit, waving probably Tiger pennants as they're over there. But the train was asked to stop in Augusta, and they asked the boys to get off the train, go back home, go back to school. That was the end of their journey to Detroit. There's a lot of them that ended up being animals. Several prowlers. I read one where a lady called very nervous that a prowler was peeking in her window. The cops showed up. It was a cow that had got loose peeking in her window. Another one up in the Plainwell area. They brought a cow in, I guess, to the butcher or something like that. They found 63 stones in the cow's stomach, and I guess that's pretty typical. And found that they often eat stones, and the story says they also eat wire, nuts, bolts, sticks, and sometimes it appears that there's basically a whole hardware store in the stomach of some of the cows that they bring in. So, didn't know that. That was something new that I had learned. And another one here, this is at the little park that's still there at the corner of Wheaton and Westnage Street. Small little park. I guess the neighborhood boys had gone and made a 9-hole golf course in the park there. And after breaking a few windows, hitting a few cars with golf balls, the police were called and the boys were told you can no longer play golf in the park. And I think even a little new city law was put in effect that you can no longer play golf in any of the local city parks. A study that was done, and was up in Lansing, but it also was affected Kalamazoo, that in the 1930s, that we know with stoplights and signs and all kinds of warnings, you cross the street now, there's even a voice telling you what to do. But back in the 30s, signs were relatively new, and I don't even believe we did have the green and yellow and red lights. And it said a check made in the vicinity of 234 towns and cities disclosed only that 26% of drivers observed stop signs, while 21.3% failed even to slow down. So you can imagine today that only 20% of the people even would slow down, wouldn't even slow down at a stop sign. So that we've, in some ways from the 30s, we've come a long, long ways as far as our stop signs and driving and that type of thing. So that'll give you, again, I've got 600 of these stories. I'm planning on someday putting them in a book. It's taken a long time and working on it, but so far it's just been a fun hobby accumulating all these and doing various talks around town and that type of thing, to sharing some of these fun stories with folks.
Now, I know that you actually put them into about 90 to 100 categories, too. What were some of those bigger categories that you found out?
Okay, good question. What I started finding after a while of if I came up with more than probably 5 stories per category, I in the way I was accumulating these and putting them in a book, it was worthy of its own chapter, I guess you would call it. So murder, suicide, robberies, cows, horses, ducks, fish, train crashes, car crashes, airplanes, bank robberies, assault, chain letters. I could go on and on. It's amazing over the years how many oddball things, even the category cows, they made the paper 10 or 12 times for various disturbances. One right down here in Upjohn Park, a cow got stuck in the muck at the edge of the pond. So they had to tie a rope around its neck and hook it up to the bumper of a car, an old Model T, and pull a cow out of the swamp in downtown Kalamazoo here with a car. So anyway, I've got close to 100 different categories of these.
Were there any categories that surprised you that you could even make a category for that, you know?
Oh, there were a couple, like lightning. I mean, it's somewhat odd that lightning, and back in the 30s, there weren't as many people or homes or cars, but even a category like lightning, there were 4 or 5 times when I remember one particular one that a man and woman in schoolcraft were visiting some neighbors with a horse and carriage, and on their way home, a lightning bolt struck and killed the horse that was pulling their carriage back to their house. So the story didn't continue on, but that had to probably be kind of a mess. You've got a dead horse hooked up to a horse and carriage, and you're not home yet. And how do you get the carriage home? How do you unhook the horse? But that'd probably be one. And there's a lot of others. Chain letters, seances were big. There were a lot of things like that, which was popular. A lot more folks believed in that type of thing. So there were a lot of scams of saying that they could find your dead relatives or give us money and we could find this or do this or that. And that was quite a popular thing back in the 30s.
So do you still look for these stories?
I do, but I don't quite. I think I've got enough. What I've thought is if I do get this book together, I could go and do another one from the 1940s. And really, this could be done in any city that has a big newspaper in the country, probably, since most of these are local to Kalamazoo. I'm sure if I went to Grand Rapids or some other city, you could do the exact same thing. But the reason it's probably not been done before, it takes an awful lot of time to go through page by page, and you end up reading a lot of interesting headline stories besides what I'm doing of the going through the various wars or other crazy things that might have been happening around the world. Those are the main headline stories every day, but I'm trying to not read those to look for these little oddball paragraphs on page 7 of woman trapped in second floor bathroom of house and have to have the whole fire department come and get her out, that type of thing that wouldn't make the paper today.
So when you were going through, how did you really separate out what you constitute as amazing?
Good question. And I guess that's a personal preference, but I didn't go for the big headline stories that probably would have made it across the country. Typically, most of these were anywhere from three sentences to a paragraph or two, and mainly things that might be considered mundane or just odd or quirky, but not really necessarily that serious. Things that, again, in this day and age, that there would not be room in a typical paper or radio or anything else for a lot of the just strange things of bicycle stolen or typewriter stolen, or I remember several of these, a break-in takes 11 cents, or a box of candy was stolen from a house over on Oak Street. Things that, again, that just kind of makes you laugh a little bit. So I thought, I'll save that for later. And I didn't use all of them, but I'm not sure how amazing they are. Just I like the name Amazing Tales, the old pulp-type magazines and books of the 30s, I guess.
So what was the most surprising thing that you learned while you were collecting these tales?
Oh, I guess how many there really were that and there were some days where there may have even been three or four fun little quirky stories like this in the same day's paper that all happened here in town that I'm sure if we had a way of getting the word out, things like this are probably still happening today of things happening with cats and dogs and, I don't know, cows and horses or bicycles getting run over and that type of thing. But we're not going to really know about it unless it happened to our neighbor or a friend of ours. It would stay at a much smaller circle. So that's what I'm not sure exactly what the point is, other than there's a lot of fun, interesting things going on around us. Most of it positive. They're just funny. And a lot of it's pretty harmless, but we're never really going to know about it because it's not going to be considered newsworthy or noteworthy anymore. Another story about Kalamazoo real quick. I found a story of a man, 74, and a woman, 60, a married couple, wanted to go to California, had never traveled very much. They only had about $3.12, and the story actually quotes this. They hitchhiked to California and back on $3 and some loose change. By it said sleeping in different camps, ditches, working as cooks and dishwashers in various restaurants, and able to, by traveling, it took them a couple months, but they made it all the way to California and back on about $3 by working along the way and hitchhiking all the way. And here's a couple that's getting up there, 74 and 60 years of age. Another one I found, there was a gentleman that lived in Brooklyn, New York. His son was in prison up in Marquette in the Upper Peninsula. And this gentleman was getting up there in his mid-60s. He had no money, wanted to see his son before he either passed away or his son got out of prison. He got his bicycle and he rode from basically New York City all the way to Marquette in the Upper Peninsula to visit his son in prison before he passed away. And there was no Mackinac Bridge back then or major paths or roads. And this was just a one little paragraph story in the paper that, in today's age, this would be a great Quentin Tarantino movie or some other quirky kind of movie that would make a fascinating story. But a lot of these things just ended up being a paragraph and nobody's ever going to know anything more about that. Probably one of the more interesting local stories. I live on Long Lake, which is, it's actually in Scott's, just out in the Portage area. But anyway, found an obituary, and I think the obituary was from like 1948 or somewhere around in there. But there was a legend of the Long Lake Sea Monster, and it was more than a legend, but back around the turn of the century, a sea monster, basically a dragon-looking head, popped out of Long Lake and spit some water out and basically scared everyone on a July 4th weekend to death, thinking this is the craziest fish or monster we've ever seen. And everybody quickly that had been swimming got out of the water. All of the men that were able got in rowboats with shotguns and patrolled the lake for the next hour or two looking for this horrible sea monster that was going to kill everybody out at Long Lake. and it wasn't spotted, or they never could find anything. The police came out. It took them a while to get out there back then. Then about a week or two later, all at once, this Long Lake sea monster pops out of the water again, spits water, scares everybody, gets everybody out of the lake. No, not one kid would swim on that lake for the next 3 or 4 days, and then it would disappear. And this happened over the next 10 or 15 years. It would make periodic appearances, typically at very busy times, about when people had forgotten about the sea monster. And then a man, I believe his name was Colonel Jordan, passed away back in the 40s sometime, and admitted on his deathbed, and I've got the obituary somewhere, that he was the Long Lake sea monster. And back around 1900, he was sitting around with some friends one winter and thought, what would be kind of a fun practical joke to play on the lake? So he took some cables and some pulleys and some weights, and he sunk this sea monster out, I don't know, 1,500 feet offshore, but he had it tied with cables and pulleys that led into his basement with some type of pedaling contraption. And so anytime he wanted, he could go in his house down in his basement and start pedaling this thing, and the sea monster would pop out of the water and scare everybody. And then with the way the weights worked, it would pull back down under the, it was deep enough out there, nobody could see it from the top of the water. And he was able to get away with this for many, many years. No one ever caught him or had any idea who it was until he finally admitted on his deathbed. And it's in the obituary that it was him that did that.
So Washington, D.C. had Deep Throat, and we had the Long Lake sea monster.
Yes.
What kinds of things can people expect to hear and see on your program on January 8th?
Okay, what I have is a lot of visuals. Since this is radio, I'm just talking now, but I have copied and have a slideshow or a digital program of many of these. A lot of it is just like I'm doing now, just conversing and telling about them, but I do show hard copies of a lot of these, as well as to maybe liven up or spice up the show. They have accumulated lots of old photographs and mementos and papers from that era, from a lot of long gone stores and businesses and products that just to show people, do you remember this, or do you remember the old Gilmore's department store or Shakespeare fishing lures and that type of thing, that the original Kalamazoo Brewing Company, their building at the corner of Lake and Portage was just torn down here several months ago. So stuff like that, just to, it's not really anything to do with Amazing Tales, but kind of things from this area, from that era.
Just, you know, historical memorabilia. Yeah, yeah, and you had, I saw that you had some drive-in memorabilia from Douglas and Portage, right?
That is correct. We actually had 3 drive-in movie theaters, and I was lucky enough back in, I guess, college days, they were all still open. Probably the most famous is the Douglas Drive-In. There's nothing really that remains there now, but the original sign, which is a big, was a big neon, I think a 57 Chevy, is now in the Henry Ford Museum. But I've got some original photographs from that drive-in and some of the old programs. And there was the Portage Drive-In, which is over across from the airport on Portage Road, that was there for many, many years. And if anyone is interested, there is one drive-in theater that the building and the whole screen is still there. If you drive up Douglas just south of Plainwell, the old 131 drive-in movie screen is still there, and you can still see the letters that say 131 drive-in. It is now Perks Auto Parts, and the drive-in probably closed back in the 80s sometime, but the old theater and screen and everything else is still there.
And you also had a piece of an interesting sort of weekly newsletter or newspaper that was kind of around Jim Crow era.
I do have a couple copies of a paper. This is from 1963. It's called the Kalamazoo Weekly Star. And the byline or the mini headline underneath that says, Southwestern Michigan's only Negro newspaper. Don't know how long it lasted, but it's a very interesting paper, and I was very lucky to be able to get my hands on some copies of this thing that's got all kinds of interesting stories and ads and everything else, but it's just one among the many newspapers that have been around this area over the years.
So what are some of the newspapers that you collected from? Was it just the Gazette or?
Oh, most of the stories came from the Kalamazoo Gazette, just because I had easy access to the bound volumes. But it's always interesting to look through. For instance, I'm looking here at the Kalamazoo Daily Telegraph from, it says, Tuesday evening, November 13th, 1888. Price 3 cents, volume 20, so I believe, or number 76. It looks like it had been around for at least 20 years or so. The Kalamazoo News Advertiser. This is from 1940, and it's got a picture of Wendell Willkie versus Franklin Roosevelt on the front cover of this particular paper. Again, October 31st, 1940. The Vicksburg Commercial, which is one of the older papers around. I've got one from Cassopolis. They're kind of hard to hold on to. They do yellow and fall apart in your hands, but they were much larger and thicker, and it's amazing. There were several hundred stories in each day's paper back then in most of these papers.
Yeah, especially with today's papers even downsizing even more. Like, of course, the Gazette has gone to 3 days a week, I believe.
I believe so. I believe it's just home-delivered. I think it's still available every day, but just home-delivered 3 days a week. But it's interesting, the physical size of these pages are just, it's almost 2 feet across by close to probably 3 feet long. It's hard to believe people could hold these and go through these things, that they're more than twice the size, almost the physical size anyway, of what a page in any paper across the country would look like right now. But
now, how thick are those? Is that a full paper you have there?
This particular one right here is two or three sections. I've got a Kalamazoo Gazette from Sunday, May 2nd, 1937. I probably don't have all of the sections here. The main section was 20 pages. Typically, I think Sunday they might have had two sections. So main section was 20 pages, and the second section was, looks like, another 24 pages, something like that. Tigers win 11-4 behind Tommy Bridges was the headline of the May 2nd, 1937 paper.
How can people see your program? Is it free? Is there a fee to get in, or do you have to register, anything like that?
I think they want you maybe to call in advance, but it's at the Parchment Public Library out on Riverview, and it is Tuesday night, and I believe it's at 6:30. They've got a very, very nice auditorium in the lower level of the library out there, and they have a whole wide variety of different programs, and they have asked me to come out. I thought they heard about this somehow and asked me to come out and talk about Amazing Tales, all the kind of interesting, quirky, oddball things that I've accumulated over the years.
So is there anything else that you wanted to talk about before we say goodbye?
I can't think of anything. Just come on out. You'll enjoy the show.